This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kidnappers, a volunteer-based community access station. For more information, go to www.radiokidnappers.org.nz. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this program available through funding the Access Internet Radio Project.
There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium, and gold, protactinium, and indium, and gallium, and iodine.
You're listening to Radio Kidnappers, the voice of Hawke's Bay, and I'm Lynn Trafford, presenting on behalf of the Hawke's Bay branch of the Royal Society of New Zealand, Hawke's Bay Scientists on Air. This program is your opportunity to get to know recently retired and practicing scientists from around the bay. With me in the studio, I have Dr. John Pickering, veterinarian specializing in farm animals. Born in the UK, John came to New Zealand with his dairy farming parents when he was 2 years old, arriving here in the 1950s when the New Zealand government was keen to have farmers from the UK. The family worked on various farms around the Lower North Island, with young John attending many different schools. Today, we welcome to Radio Kidnappers, John Pickering.
Thank you, Lynn.
It's nice to have you with us in the studio today, John. Now, with all this going around to different schools, was there a period of time in your schooling where you thought, science is a pretty cool subject. I quite like doing this. I quite like my association with farm animals. Maybe I might like to be a vet. Was there this time?
Yes, there certainly was. I spent a lot of time on the farm with my father in those early days. In fact, because he was just starting off with very little money, I actually had to help milk the cows when I came home from school, which perhaps not too many children do today. So I really, really got involved with animals at an early age and got to love them. And even before I got to high school, I knew I wanted to be a vet, and that's what I was going to do.
And so even though you went to four different high schools,
that's right,
you didn't lose that desire to be a vet.
No, I think it made me more determined, because that was disruptive through the teenage years, as you can imagine.
Okay. And
I think what it did do is made me more determined to succeed and to do what I wanted to do and not to be put off by all this disruption.
So in the 1960s, off you went to Massey.
That's correct.
Yes, as people did in those days.
Yes.
To Massey.
I must admit, the vet school was quite young then.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of the more earlier graduates from the Massey Veterinary University. Prior to that, graduates had to graduate in Australia.
Yeah, so 1960s was very special to us then as far as our development of services was concerned.
Yes, particularly Massey University, being an agricultural university
and
a veterinary university, it was very much in the infancy stage and was starting to do a very good job for the New Zealand agricultural industry.
So do you look back at your time there with fondness?
Oh, very much so.
Yeah, I'm sure you had a great time there. I don't think we need to know all about
the
great time.
No, there's a lot of stories, but we won't talk about
some
those.
Some of the
today.
Stories will come out, but not necessarily those particular ones of your time as a student. So you qualified when in the early 1970s, John?
That's correct, 1974, I think it was.
1974, and then off you go to your very first job in Taihavi.
That's right, that was a great experience, having the opportunity to go to the high country. I was always very keen on the farm side of things, having with the upbringing I had. So to have an opportunity to move to Taihape, where there was a lot of sheep, cattle, horses, and all creatures that run around on the land, I was delighted and really enjoyed my time there.
And it's a good, one's first job is a good foundation upon which to build, but it also teaches you skills that you probably never lose.
That's right.
No, it's kind of special, the first job, isn't it?
It is, and the farming community there were tremendous. A lot of bigger stations, and they were very supportive of a new graduate.
Of a young guy.
And if I didn't stop and have a cup of tea after every job, they were very much put out back in those days.
Yes,
it was very much a family affair, and that really got me off to a very good start, I think.
That's great. That's really good. And it set you up to then go with the young lady that was going to be your wife.
Oh, yes.
Off you go to Whanganui, the two of you, for just a period of 1 or 2 years to get started.
Well, that was the plan, but...
Yeah, it went wrong, didn't it?
No, as it turned out, I stayed there 40 years. We had four children and got to like the place and got very involved in the community, and I got very involved in the veterinary practice, which I really enjoyed, so...
Was it quite funny?
The plan changed quite quickly.
How that happens. That's really quite a gorgeous little story. When you went there to this veterinary practice that you went to in Whanganui, it was, you described it to me off air, as a pretty run-down country practice. Now, you and your two partners, you spent some time building this up and sorting yourselves out as to where you wanted to go with your careers.
Yeah, that's so true,
so
Lynn.
What happened during that time, John?
Yes, the practice had been run down. Back then, vets were in short supply and they were having a job to get vets to join the practice there. I think mainly because it was actually working at a very old house, which is another little funny story. The house was so bad that people used to bring their cats and dogs down the corridor to one of the rooms in the house, and some of the boards were even missing. And there was the odd time when somebody put their foot through the floorboard. So that's where we started. But by the time I finished, we went from a 3-vet practice to something like, I think, 10 vets. They're there now in a streamlined practice that's right up to the top standard. So it's been quite...
4 decades. It just shows you what happens in 4 decades.
Oh, it does.
Doesn't it, John? I think we'll talk a little bit about some of the changes that have occurred over those 4 decades, because really the world has changed in that time.
Oh, it surely has.
Not least of all the fact that you decided that you were going to specialise in farm animals. That was always going to be your forte, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I did enjoy the companion animals as well, and I did a lot of work in that area, because we had to back then, because we had to be jack-of-all-trades. Any vet that qualified back in the 70s had to be able to do everything.
Everything, yeah.
Which today is different. Quite often new graduates will specialise more or less right from the start. Mm. And they're just about expected to specialise. So that's the big change that we've seen.
Right. That's
but getting back to the changes I've seen on the farm side, first thing that comes to mind was TB. Everybody's very conscious of the TB, how TB's been a big issue in New Zealand. Well, it was rife back then, and every second farmer had an issue with it. But as years have gone by, we're now getting to the point where it's getting closer and closer to being eradicated from New Zealand.
Yeah.
And another disease that a lot of people have probably forgotten is a disease called brucellosis that we had in cattle. Humans used to be affected by it, and the condition was called undulant fever. And it was a very serious disease. And when I qualified, I spent a lot of my time running around vaccinating young cattle with a vaccine called strain 19, which was a live vaccine, highly dangerous. If I injected myself with it, I would have got undulant fever, and we lived in fear every day of contracting the disease by mistaken vaccination. So I just mentioned that because with today's OSH requirements and so on, there'd be no way that you'd be allowed to use a vaccine like that. It wouldn't be permitted because the safety, there was no safety. But anyway, with blood testing and vaccination, that disease was eradicated. It's not in New Zealand anymore.
So that's great, isn't it? So that's two that in your lifetime have all, one disappeared and one all but disappeared. Can we talk now about the anaesthetics? The anaesthetics, differences that have happened over those 40 years, that's a biggie, isn't it?
It is a big one. When I qualified, we really only had phenobarbitone-type anaesthetics, which were very useful for companion animals and horses. But when it came to my area of sheep and cattle, they weren't much good there. So I very quickly had to learn how to cast a cattle beast or a bull with a rope. to be able to do any, say, surgical procedures like removing a growth or attending to a bad foot or something similar. So that had its safety concerns as well, but also quite exciting and quite an adventure.
So what has happened with the anaesthetics?
There's been a lot of development with new anaesthetics and with cattle. We have a drug now called xylazine that's very, very effective in cattle, plus there's others. And it's the same across all the species. We have some very good anaesthetics.
And do you use the same one for every kind of animal?
No.
Or is there a different one?
Well, no, there's variation between the species. Some of the anaesthetics we do use over more than one species, but quite often we're using different ones for different species, like different for deer, different for sheep, different for cattle, horses.
It's made
life a lot easier, and also it's... You know, welfare and pain, and that's so important today. And,
yes.
You know, animal welfare is just at a very high level now compared to when I qualified.
You want a healthy beast, don't you?
You know, it's quite frightening to think back at some of the things we had to try and do.
You kind of touched on this, but I'd like to hear a little bit more about what changes that you have seen over this period of time as regards surgery, maybe the sorts of equipment that you used and the protective clothing that you used during that time.
Yeah, I hate to mention it, but we used to do back then was boil our instruments more or less in a billy. And we might have used an odd drape, but I tell you what, we didn't use gloves and drapes and gloves like we do today. And of course now we have sophisticated autoclaves to sterilise our surgical equipment. And really the hospital standards are very similar to the human hospitals today. It really is. So, you know, it's been great to see that improvement over 40 years and to have been part of going from one thing to another.
And what about antibiotics? You would have seen things go from penicillin to...
That's right.
..wherever you are today.
Penicillin was the main... It's still used today, penicillin.
Yeah.
It's still a good antibiotic in its place, but we do have a lot more variety now and, different antibiotics for different conditions, more specific, in other words, and better treatments, better success rates and different antibiotics, again, for different species, because we are dealing with quite a few different animals. And other species that weren't around in my day, like even rabbits and goats and so on, which weren't really farmed back then. You know, we've now got treatments for them as well.
While we're on this, you mentioned before about strain 19, but what about other vaccines? What has happened to vaccines?
Oh,
you've gone from live, quite dangerous things to what sorts of vaccines are we using today?
Oh, there's been huge changes in the vaccine area, Lynn. Just to give a few examples, take the sheep side of things. Sheep abortion was a major issue back in the 70s. There's two diseases called toxoplasmosis and campylobacter that used to cause these diseases. Farmers couldn't do anything about it. Now we have two very effective vaccines to control that alone, which has improved the profitability of the sheep farming industry just substantially, just by having that those vaccines available on their own. But as well as that, we've got new improved vaccines to control salmonella and leptospirosis, BVD, which is, not everybody knows about that disease, but it's the most important cattle virus disease in New Zealand that can cause huge issues with fertility and disease in young stock. We now have a vaccine for that, which we never did way back then. And on the dog side, we also have a parvo vaccine now. When I qualified, parvo disease wasn't even thought of. The first outbreak was in the 80s, and it's now worldwide, that disease. And there's a lot of different parvo vaccines that are on the market, manufactured by a lot of different companies to control that disease. So it's been a huge improvement as well.
While we're on dogs...
Yes.
We don't hear so much about hydatids these days, yet it was something that people lived in fear of, more or less, didn't they?
Yes, it was. I had a very good client, actually, back in the 80s that I knew well that died from hydatids. Now, that's not something you hear too much about today.
No.
But hydatids has been eradicated from New Zealand now due to the hydatids control scheme with regular treatment of dogs every 6 weeks.
Yes.
And that's been another huge plus, because hydatids was a terrible disease. You just would not want to die from that, especially those that unfortunately got cysts in the brain. That did happen occasionally, and you can imagine the consequences of that.
Would have been awful. You've got a bit of a funny story to tell about the use of rubber gloves when you're actually out on the farm. People know that surgeons of all kinds, people, animals, wear gloves in the surgery these days. But
that's right.
Out on the farm, sort of head-to-toe gloves were sort of required, weren't they?
Yes, that's correct. Well, you're talking about pregnancy testing cattle.
Yes, I am.
Back in Taihape and Whanganui, we had a huge number of beef cows in particular that we pregnancy test every year and we used to use rubber gloves back then. This was long before the days of having scanners, which we have today, and the new graduates have it quite easy, being able to run around using a scanner to pregnancy test. We had to do it manually.
Feel
and it was
it.
Hard work.
Yes.
And all we had to protect our arms and hands were these big long rubber gloves that were very protective, but I can tell you they were very hot, very sweaty, very hard to pull off, and very hard to get the green material off afterwards. And that was long before we had plastic gloves, because a few years later, you know, very good quality plastic gloves came on the market that never got holes on them, so we could use those instead.
Yeah, would have been much easier.
Yes.
It didn't pay to forget the gloves, though, did it, John?
No, there was one occasion when I had to go out on horseback to a station at the back of Whanganui, Mountview Station, it was. And I got all the way out the back on a very cold, wet, windy day, and it was nearly snowing. And I realised I'd forgotten my gloves. I left them in my ute. And I thought, what am I going to do? I've got 200 cows to pregnancy test. I can't not do them. So what did I do? I used the bare arms. And I can tell you, I realised then how good these rubber gloves were, and later on the plastic gloves, because my arms got very green very quickly. And they got very sore very quickly and I started to even bleed. And it took me about a month it took me about 3 days to get the green stuff off and about another month for my arms to heal up properly.
Yeah.
So I really...
Lesson learned. Let's do a bit of a leap here into drenching, because drenching for cattle and sheep has always been something that we have had to do. But these days it's quite specialised, isn't it? The sorts of chemicals that you're using.
Yes, when I qualified, we really only had two chemicals on the market, thiobenzole and levamazole. The trade names of those drenches, the older farmers would know, as Nilverm and thiobenzole. But since then, we've had a lot more new products come on the market. Unfortunately, we have, because back then, there was no drench resistance. The worms that we were treating weren't resistant to those chemicals. But as time's gone by with more intensive farming and a lot more drenching, we are living in a world now where we do have quite a bit of resistance to the different drench families. So it's been quite good that we've been able to develop new ones, so we've got more choices.
Following on from that, and the changes in the kinds of chemicals that we have used on farms, if we go back some decades, we used some very dangerous chemicals,
didn't we?
DDT, 2,4-5-T spring to mind.
Yes, that's right.
What has happened to those chemicals? They've gone, haven't they,
completely?
They
have. The organochlorines that you're talking about and organophosphates have more or less gone, and they've been replaced by a lot safer, newer products, particularly, and we're talking particularly about dipping sheep now for lice and fly strike. And we have products called IGRs, insect growth regulators, that are a lot safer and more effective. So that again is good in respect to safety and welfare,
which is what it's about,
the world we live in. And it's not just safety to the animals, it's safety to the people who are using these chemicals.
You would have seen some changes in the kinds of animals that we are farming too.
Surely.
I mean, we used to have lots and lots of sheep, 75 million sheep or something.
Right.
But we now have deer and we now have goat.
That's right.
And these breeds are accepted farm animals, aren't they?
They surely.
We don't laugh at people that do this
anymore. No, when I qualified, it was very conservative. We only had sheep cattle and beef cattle and dairy cattle. And that was about it. But since then, deer farming has become a huge industry, goat farming to a lesser extent. On the sheep side, we now have milking sheep, and I just heard today that Landcorp are looking to increase their milking sheep numbers in New Zealand in response to the issues with the pay up for the dairy cow milk.
Yeah.
So That's going to grow. That's going to grow.
We'll talk about that in 40 years' time, John, as to what actually happened with that particular industry. I'm going to take a leap back in time so that in going back, we can actually come forward. In the early 1990s, your practice in Whanganui decided that as an adjunct, you should get into the grazing business. Now, what is the grazing business, and why did you decide it was a good move?
Yes, we're going back one step further. As I said at the start, we were mainly giving a fire brigade service, the three of us that were there, and we decided if we were going to make any advancement and grow the practice, we needed to diversify. So we looked at all sorts of avenues, and one that came to mind, and we could see a real opportunity, was to develop a dairy heifer grazing business. And I, being very keen on the dairy side, I thought this would just be right for me. Because at that time, there was a lot of dairy heifer grazing going on privately between dairy farmers and graziers or beef farmers, wherever they might be grazing the heifers. But unfortunately, it wasn't being done very well. There was no contracts in place. There was no direction. And also payment was very much based on flat rate per week, which you can, as anybody would realise, is not the best way to do things. If you want a well-grown animal coming home, there needs to be incentive. So I used to get involved with disputes between these farmers, between the two parties, and thought, well, hang on, there's an opportunity here for a vet practice to get involved and to put a bit of professionalism into this business. So that's what I did. I started with 200 heifers on one farm, wrote up contracts, put everything together the best I could, with systems such as regular monitoring, regular weighing, regular recording, regular reporting. I put an animal health insurance scheme into it as well, whereby the graziers and the dairy farmers didn't have to pay for veterinary visits to their sick heifers. Instead, they would pay a fee up front, just like you would if you take out a health insurance policy yourself.
Yes.
So that way, it saved a lot of disputes and a lot of misunderstanding.
And there is a funny story, though, isn't there? That's the serious story. But when you started off with your 200 heifers, and you were talking to one of the local farmers,
yes, that's right. But one of the first farmers that came on board, he just sent the heifers down. He rang me back. He said, "Oh, John," he said, "I'm just thinking about it." He said, "I presume you're going to you'll have some bulls available to put with the heifers during the mating time."
Whoops.
And I sort of thought, holy heck, I haven't thought about that.
It's funny now, isn't it?
So I had a sleepless night thinking, well, obviously, if I'm going to run a dairy heifer grazing business, I'm going to have a bull business that goes hand in glove if we're going to provide a complete service or complete package, which was my goal with this grazing business. So from then on, we developed a bull business. So now, just to jump forward quite a few years, we've got a business now with about 15,000 heifers based in the lower North Island, including Hawke's Bay. We've actually moved into the Hawke's Bay area as well.
Yes.
And we're managing that on 35 grazing blocks. As well as that, we have five farmers growing about 700 bulls a year for us that we use over these heifers.
So it's been very successful.
It's been a very successful business, and I think if you spoke to farmers that are on our scheme, they'll tell you that they are very pleased with the results they get. The contract's in place, so they know what to expect, they know what they're getting, they tick the boxes of the things they want done, so it's all very clear as to what's required, and the graziers also know what's required as well. And by doing it that way and having it all open, we also manage the money as well, so that's all handled as well. In other words, we handle everything, and it's worked out to be a very, very good business indeed, and likewise the bull business has as well.
There's been a couple of achievements that have sat alongside of this, and I know sometimes it's a little bit embarrassing for people to talk about it. And we've only got a couple of minutes left, but... You were awarded in 2011 the Alan Baldry Award, and this is for services to farming.
Yeah, it was services to particularly to the farming side of the veterinary industry, and I think the grazing business. Also, I had a role as leading a control scheme for the BVD virus that I mentioned earlier.
Yes, that's right.
The most important cattle disease in New Zealand. I led the steering committee on that for nearly 10 years, which has had, I think, quite an impact in helping to reduce the impacts of that disease in New Zealand as well. So I think it was probably mainly for the grazing, the BVD, and perhaps some of the other work I've done with farm consultancy and farm management and farmers over the years.
It's quite interesting.
Very honoured to have got that award and very humbled by it.
It's a splendid achievement for you, John, and congratulations from all of us here on getting that particular award. What I think is somewhat ironical, I guess, is over this 40 years you've gone from dealing with sick animals to really dealing with healthy
animals,
aren't you? You're dealing with...
Yeah, so which I prefer, and it's more positive being able to go and to see a farmer with healthy animals and looking at how we can do things even better rather than arriving when the gates often, the gates often already shut and it's too late to save an animal.
Yeah.
And I've always been one that's wanted to be, able to do something more positively. So that's why I went that way.
It's a great change. Mm. John, on behalf of the Hawke's Bay branch of the Royal Society of New Zealand and of Radio Kidnappers, thank you, Dr. John Pickering, for being my guest on Hawke's Bay Scientists on Air. To find out more about veterinary services for farm animals or veterinary careers in general, or the role and work of the Royal Society of New Zealand, a Google search will in the first instance be of help. Please join me on Monday mornings at 9:30 to meet another practicing and recently retired Hawke's Bay scientist. I'm Lynn Trafford.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kidnappers, a volunteer-based community access station. For more information, go to www.radiokidnappers.org.nz. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this program available through funding the Access Internet Radio Project.